From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The parents of the 41 missing student teachers from the Ayotzinapa Teacher Training School who disappeared after a police assault in Guerrero, Mexico, were scheduled to meet behind closed doors for the first time Wednesday with President Enrique Peña Nieto at his official residence in Mexico City. Also expected to attend were the parents of two of the six students who died on September 26th in the town of Iguala in Guerrero following that police assault. The group said it would demand that President Nieto also conduct a search for the missing students, assuming they are still alive, in addition to the ongoing searches for their bodies in clandestine mass graves, as the government has been doing for over a month. Fidolfo Rosales from the Human Rights Center at Tlachinola Mountain said in an interview that the parents will ask for the, quote, intensification of the search to look for them alive and not to focus the investigation solely on mass graves, closed quote. The parents also want the president to stop the ongoing attempts by police investigators and the media to criminalize the students by linking them to drug cartels that they were actually organizing against. A spokesperson for the parents' committee said that the parents do not want to take pictures with the president and said they would not allow the press to attend the meeting. The group promised to hold a press conference afterwards. The parents also said that Guerrero's surrogate governor, Rogelio Ortega, was not welcome to participate in the meeting because, since he became governor last week, he has not met or even spoken with the parents' committee. They added, quote, Rogelio Ortega has not even had the decency of saying, hello, I'm the governor, closed quote. Although the U.S. has faced numerous accusations of using a double standard in its behavior towards Ukraine over the past year's unrest, conflicting U.S. positions towards the recent parliamentary election in Kiev and next week's elections in the East have left many analysts at a loss for words. We have this report from Press TV.
Tensions between Russia and the U.S. continue over the crisis in Ukraine. The U.S. has called unlawful the elections planned by pro-Russians in Ukraine's eastern regions. The U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has warned Russia and the pro-Russians that any recognition of the elections in eastern Ukraine violates the Minsk Agreement. Kerry's comments come after Russia announced that it would recognize the elections, adding that they should be held next week as scheduled. The Russian announcement has angered officials in Kiev who have accused Moscow of violating the truce deal agreed in September. A spokesman for the Ukrainian president said the elections threaten the entire peace process. To discuss the situation further, let's go to Washington and talk to Rustem Safronov, political analyst with Rossiya Sagdonia. Welcome, sir. Mr. Safronov, why is the U.S. considering these elections unlawful while it approves of the parliamentary elections in Ukraine?
Well, initially, the government of Poroshenko, the clique of the Poroshenko in the international arena playing the role of clientele of the United States. So obviously it is pro-Western government, which they came into the power initially with violence and with a coup, and now just legitimizing itself, not so much through elections, but through previous war under nationalistic slogans. So, and that government is playing a role of some sort of a catapult against Russia. Obviously, United States very pleased with that kind of government, which is trying to pull away Ukraine from Russia, from traditional brother, ally of Ukraine.
Some ugly echoes of European history in Germany. An entire class of German teenagers is under investigation after some were pictured greeting each other with Nazi salutes and using far-right terminology during online chats. RT's Peter Oliver reports from Berlin.
Parents and authorities have been left horrified by the revelations that this this class of 14 and 15-year-olds had been communicating with each other via the online messaging service WhatsApp, posting pictures of themselves giving Nazi salutes, also posting far-right and neo-Nazi slogans as well. Now, the law in Germany on this, well, it couldn't be any clearer. any public display of Nazi symbols, salutes or phrases can carry with it up to a six-month jail term for a first offence. Now, those WhatsApp messages have been confiscated by the police. We understand that two of the teenagers are immediately being looked into. And when the school resumes after the half-term break on Monday, there's going to be a wider investigation into the whole class.
Yehuda Teichtal is the rabbi of the Jewish community of Berlin. He spoke with RT Tuesday.
How do you and the rest of the Jewish community feel about what has happened at this school?
Obviously, with great worry, when one sees an entire class or a group of teenagers greeting each other in this form, it is a root for concern and worry. We are confident that the authorities will deal with it in the proper way, but definitely there is concern among young people and young families here, even in Berlin.
The UN Security Council held an emergency meeting Wednesday over Israel's plans to build more illegal settlements in occupied Palestinian lands. That meeting was requested by Jordan following a letter from the Palestinian envoy to the UN, who stressed the need to address the crisis in occupied East Jerusalem. Also Wednesday, Makiram Wibisono, Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories occupied since 1967, held a press conference in New York at which he outlined at least one obstacle he's faced since taking over the position from the former Special Rapporteur, Richard Falk, earlier this year.
I was appointed in June this year, and a month later, the terrible escalation in hostilities erupted in Gaza, leaving more than 2,000 Palestinians dead, the majority civilian, and including more than 500 children. On the Israeli side, too, there were losses, and in the West Bank, a serious worsening of the human rights situation over the summer was evident, and tension remained high. During my mission to the region in September this year, I met with some of the victims and witnesses to events in the occupied Palestinian territory. I was touched by their story and impressed with the fundamental and urgent need to improve respect for the human rights of Palestinians. Tens of thousands of children continue to live with injuries and psychological trauma of having witnessed horrific killings of family members, friends, and neighbors before their own eyes. I met Manar, a 14-year-old girl from Beit Hanun, being treated at a hospital of Amman. She lost both her legs and suffered from shrapnel wound and internal injury sustained when an Israeli strike hit an UNRWA school. Mana also lost her mother and three brothers in the same attack. Despite the pain, she still managed to smile to me and to tell me that she wanted to go back to school and become a teacher one day. After the devastation of the summer, now, as the winter fast approaches, I cannot stress enough the importance of accelerating humanitarian relief and reconstruction effort in Gaza to rebuild school, home, and hospitals. Gaza needs to quickly see and feel the impact of reconstruction and recovery. But reconstruction is not all that is needed. A long-term solution must be realized to stop this cycle of violence and violation. During my mission, I heard three demands again and again: accountability, an end to the blockade, and an end to the occupation. I'm deeply disappointed that the government of Israel has yet to allow me access to Israel and the occupied Palestinian territory. But I will continue to seek both dialogue and unhindered access to the occupied Palestinian territory. I'm committed to objectively and impartially reporting on the human rights situation and the OPT. My message to Israel is to let me go. I wish to speak with both Palestinian and Israelis to get the full picture and see the situation with my own eyes. My role is not to resolve the conflict, but to offer an objective assessment of the situation of human rights in the occupied Palestinian territory, and to make recommendations that, if implemented, will improve the situation of human rights.
As we reported earlier, A vote at the UN General Assembly Tuesday once again saw almost the entire world community voting overwhelmingly in favor of ending the U.S. blockade of Cuba. Stephanie Kutrix was at the UN and filed this report.
A resolution calling to end the United States' economic, commercial, and financial embargo against Cuba has been adopted almost unanimously by the UN General Assembly. 188 member states voted in favor. The United States and Israel voted against. Palau, Micronesia, and the Marshall Islands abstained. This is the 23rd consecutive resolution of its kind, which urges laws imposing sanctions to be repealed. The permanent representative from St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Inga Rhonda King, said there is no other example of the international community speaking so overwhelmingly and consistently.
The embargo remains stubbornly in place, and its negative impact has intensified. The embargo has been and continues to be a violation of international law. It is contrary to the principles and purposes of the United Nations Charter, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines takes the floor to reemphasize our deeply held conviction that the ongoing embargo is a flagrant, massive, and systematic violation of the rights of an entire people.
The embargo against Cuba has been in place since 1960. According to the Cuban Minister of Foreign Affairs, Bruno Rodriguez Perilla, the accumulated economic damages amount to more than $1 trillion. Meanwhile, the United States insists that Cuba uses the yearly General Assembly vote as what it described as an attempt to shift blame for economic problems it is experiencing. Stephanie Kutrix, United Nations.
All told, the General Assembly's 69th session on the U.S. embargo against Cuba saw about an hour of commentary from various representatives of the nations around the world. A number of other victims of U.S. sanctions also spoke. This was the representative of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or North Korea.
It is the consistent position of the government of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea to oppose all kinds of sanctions, including economic, commercial, and financial embargoes on sovereign states. The U.S. blockade against Cuba is the legacy of the Cold War, which is intended to overthrow the legitimate social system chosen by the Cuban people. The unilateral and extraterritorial embargo imposed by the United States against Cuba constitutes an obvious infringement upon the sovereignty of Cuba in clear violation of the United Nations Charter and the international laws, and represents the violation of the human rights, denying the people's right to life and the right to development. It deserves the strongest condemnation of the United Nations and the international community. The criminal blockade policy of the U.S. against Cuba, which persists for over half a century, has caused serious losses amounting to more than $1 trillion, $100 billion in the economic and the social fields of Cuba, and also impacted third countries who have normal economic and trade relations with Cuba, thus remaining the main obstacle to the socio-economic development of the country and its people's living. As such, the inhumane and anachronistic blockade policy by the U.S. against Cuba should be terminated without delay, in conformity with the relevant UN resolution and the demands of the international community. Ending the unilateral economic, commercial, and financial blockade by the U.S. against Cuba is today's unanimous demand of the member states of the UN, including Cuba, which aspire to a sustainable development in peaceful environment. Out of the consistent stand to oppose all sorts of interference and sanctions against sovereign states, the DPRK delegation, as in the past, voted in support of the resolution on necessity of ending the economic, commercial, and financial embargo imposed by the United States of America against Cuba, and once again strongly urged the U.S. to immediately abandon its blockade against Cuba. The government of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea fully supports the efforts of the government and the people of Cuba to end the U.S. embargo and will continue to further expand and develop the economic and trade relations with Cuba in the future. In conclusion, we reiterate our strongest support to end solidarity with the struggles of the Cuban government and the people to safeguard the national dignity and sovereignty against the U.S. attempt for unilateral blockade. Thank you.
The representative of the African nation of Zimbabwe, whose nation is also a victim of U.S. sanctions and whose country was recently erected to the presidency of the African Union, also presented to the Assembly.
Madam President, allow me also to recognize and welcome the Foreign Minister of Cuba, Mr. Bruno Rodriguez Pereira, in this house. And allow me also to say that my delegation aligns its statement with the statement made by the Islamic Republic of Iran on behalf of the NAM and Bolivia on behalf of G77 plus China and on Malawi on behalf of the African group. Madam President, once again, Zimbabwe once again wishes to express its concern over the illegal and ruinous economic, commercial, and financial blockade of Cuba by the United States. Zimbabwe is dismayed that instead of being removed, the embargo is actually being reinforced, resulting in greater suffering for the people and tremendous disruptions to the Cuban business and business activities and financial transactions. The majority of member states of the United Nations have continued to reject, like they did today, the passing of national laws with extraterritorial impact and all other coercive economic measures, including unilateral sanctions, which are targeted against mainly developing countries that seek to reassert their sovereignty. Zimbabwe, which is also a victim of these ill-conceived, illegal, and immoral sanctions, fully understands their impact. Zimbabwe has, during the past 20 years, stated that the embargo against Cuba contravenes the fundamental norms of international law, international humanitarian law, the United Nations Charter, and all the norms and principles governing peaceful relations among states. The embargo is also a violation of the peoples of the principles of sovereign equality of states and non-intervention, non-interference in each other's domestic affairs. These principles were reaffirmed in the declaration of the high-level meeting of the General Assembly on the rule of law adopted on September 24, 2012, in which heads of state and government strongly urged states to refrain from promulgating and applying unilateral economic, financial, trade and trade measures not in accordance with international law and the Charter of the United Nations that impede the full achievement of economic and social development, particularly in developing countries. Madam Chair, Zimbabwe therefore joins other countries in condemning the punitive embargo on Cuba and calls for its unconditional lifting so that the people of Cuba can be left alone to pursue their economic and social destiny.
Another African nation, Angola, won its war of independence against both its former colonial power, Portugal, and Portugal's local ally, apartheid South Africa, largely with the aid of Cuba. That assistance has apparently not been forgotten by Angola.
Angola is a joint country which voted in favor of the resolution and through this reiterates its appeal to an end the economic, trade, and the financial embargo imposed by the United States of America against Cuba, since this embargo also violates international law, the purpose of and the principle of the United Nations Charter and the rule of the free trade. The embargo stands as a clear violation of human rights, as it affects the material, psychological, and spiritual well-being of the Cuban people and imposes severe obstacles to their economic, cultural, and social development, with a significant negative impact on those sensitive sectors such as health, education, and food. Angola notes with concern the continuation and the resurgence of the extraterritorial nature of the embargo, as it amounts to an interference by the United States in the affair of the sovereign state of Cuba and the right of the Cuban people to freely determine their own political and economic system. It is unfortunate that the United States maintained this position despite the visible progress achieved by Cuba in various areas, in particular education and health, areas in which, in the context of international cooperation, Cuba has helped several countries in need around the world. Angola has greatly and continues to benefit of this very valuable assistance, especially in the field of education and health. One of the most recent examples of Cuban assistance in health is the valuable contribution to the global effort to combat the Ebola epidemic affecting the West Africa region by sending several health professionals who have been doing a remarkable job with positive results. Madam President, the Republic of Angola recognizes and once again encourages the effort of the Secretary General to put an end to the economic, trade, and the financial embargo imposed by the United States against Cuba, which has been in force for more than 50 years. In this connection, we call on the international community to continue its efforts to promote a constructive result-oriented and transparent dialogue between the two countries with a view to achieving a definitive solution to this problem and the normalization of relations between the two states. Change is long overdue. Cuba, its people and country cannot continue to be blocked from fully participating in development taking place in the economy of Latin America and the Caribbean region, where the United States is the key player. Therefore, condemned to a full and free engagement with all the countries south of its border. In close with an appeal to an end of the embargo, to joining the great majority of member states of this assembly, as well as many prestigious academic institutions and American citizens who are opposed to the embargo and the advocate change in the current policy in order to create an environment which is conducive to peaceful coexistence, to constructive bilateral talks, and the overall peace in the world. Thank you, Madam President.
Another neighbor of Cuba, Ecuador, had this to say at the session.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the Republic of Ecuador, I have the honor of welcoming the presence here of the distinguished foreign minister of the sister Republic of Cuba, Bruno Rodriguez Parrilla, and laud the overwhelming outcome achieved today in favor of the resolution condemning the embargo imposed by the United States of America against Cuba, which is not only contrary to fundamental norms and principles of international law, but it is unjust, immoral, and a form of aggression. A blatant example of the fact that democracy, that democracy is an empty word which distorts its very meaning, a virtual game which breaks its own rules. It is perverse to allow anyone to play with human lives and to have the well-being of an entire people at the whim of a country which does not want to accept the reality of a world in which no state has a privileged voice and where therefore no country can take a unilateral action which runs counter to international principles and norms. For this reason, Ecuador has voted and always will vote in favor of this resolution. We'd also like to denounce that the General Consulate of Cuba in Washington has been deprived of all financial services. Blindness can really hurt. In contrast to this, Cuba gives everything it has, not of anything it has too much. And as an Ecuadorian, I have seen this. The successful program in my country for people with disabilities is something we partly are indebted to Cuba. I know that personally the quick and best response of Cuba that we witness against the Ebola crisis. For the 23rd time, the huge majority of member states have requested that an end be put to the unjust, hostile, and unilateral embargo, whose only solution is renunciation by the United States of its imperial intolerance. How much longer will we have to wait for this request to be granted, which will benefit international peace and security? It is high time that we confront the shameful double standard, which is evidenced here year after year when we speak of the rule of law, and some countries invoke their principles when it suits them and deny them when it runs counter to their own interests. Thank you.
Not one nation spoke in favor of the U.S. sanctions. Among the other targets of U.S. sanctions around the world are Iran, currently serving as president of the Non-Aligned Movement, and two members of the Security Council's permanent members, Russia and China. This past weekend, legendary jazz and rock and roll bass player Jack Bruce passed away. We offer this musical tribute in his memory. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.